Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Damage Report. Today is going to be a big day because we are, of course, going to be talking about Kavanaugh. That's the big story. But we also have big new details for that story. Shocking, bombshell new accusations that because we live in a rational, logical world where there are consequences for actions will almost certainly lead to Kavanaugh pulling his nomination. Or perhaps not. But one way or another, we're going to be talking about it. There's like 5 new wrinkles on this Kavanaugh situation, all of which you need to be aware of, not just for, you know, the analysis of the rest of today's news, but in advance of Thursday. That's tomorrow, right? What day is it? Tomorrow's testimony that, so far as we know, is still going to happen. And so far as we know right now, still only going to have 2 people, although there are multiple named accusers now that, of course, deserve their day, if not in court, at least in the Senate. Aside from Kavanaugh, we've got other important news. We're going to have an interview with an organization head that is running protests having to do with two massive banks that are financing the for-profit prisons that are continuing to allow for detention of infants, family separation, and things like that. These are protests that you can still get involved in. And then a little bit later on, we're going to be talking with a representative of Swing Left that is working to swing the Congress back to the Democrats in this election. We're going to talk about election strategy, how the midterms are proceeding, and all of that. Joining me to do this, JR Jackson's in studio.
It's JR Wednesday, which means tomorrow, of course, is Thursday when the hearings are happening. And you forgot to mention, we're going to be covering that as it goes down. At least, I mean,
that's true.
This general seemingly court proceedings is what they're going to kind of look like, in my opinion, from what I could see, with Blasey Ford and also potentially Kavanaugh. And how many more accusers potentially by tomorrow, we'll see.
Yeah, that's true. So tomorrow, if you are watching, I believe this is for our members, I'm not 100% sure, but all day, so long as the proceedings are going on, we are going to be there to break down what should, you know, as a fan of Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, this is going to be great because the Republican Senate judiciary members, all male, there's never been a Republican woman on there, have figured out this arcane ritual where they are going to channel their hatred and distrust of women from each of their souls into one elected vessel for their misogyny. Uh-huh. A young woman who will then proceed to ritualistically sacrifice Christine Blasey Ford on the floor of the Senate. So that's going to be really exciting, and we're going to be there for that entire ritual. It is members only, in fact. All many hours of it. It's going to start off. Myself and Cenk Uygur are going to be doing it. You're going to have different hosts throughout the day. I'll be returning a little bit later on in the afternoon. And you can watch that if you're a TYT member. If you're not a TYT member, go to tyt.com/join. You can fix that real fast.
Yeah, some of those hosts include J.R. Jackson.
It does include J.R. Jackson as well.
I'll break it down. I'll make sure you guys know what's going on. I'm on it.
And I will mostly waste your time. By the way, stick around for the very end of the show. We're going to be doing our latest edition of our segment, Meanwhile In, where we very briefly turn our attention on the incredibly important news happening in other countries around the world. So let's start off with Kavanaugh. Another woman has come forward with allegations against Kavanaugh that are as serious as is imaginable. And it is hard to imagine how they are simply going to push past into tomorrow's hearings and then eventually hold a vote on him, get him on the Supreme Court without having any serious consideration of these new allegations that are coming forward. So let's talk about what is being alleged. A court filing by Julie Swetnick includes claims that she witnessed Kavanaugh and his friend Mark Judge regularly drinking excessively during Washington, D.C. house parties in the early 1980s, where the two men engaged in, quote, abusive and physically aggressive behavior towards girls. We have a quote from Julie Swetnick saying, I also witnessed efforts by Mark Judge, Brett Kavanaugh, and others to cause girls to become inebriated and disoriented so that they could then be gang raped in a side room or bedroom by a train of numerous boys. And in particular, she details her own gang rape from 1982, in which she says, during the incident, I was incapacitated without my consent and unable to fight off the boys raping me. I believe I was drugged using Quaaludes or something similar placed in what I was drinking. And she says that both Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh were present for that incident. I mean, there it is. That's they've attempted to put forward a lot of defenses from the, this happened 36 years ago and there's, you know, a statute of limitations on morality to, I was a virgin, I didn't do anything. But now, these claims that he was actually participating in multiple gang rapes, including of a woman who is coming forward, says she is 100% ready to testify. That is a difficult one to just push past.
As the charges build, and it's seemingly not like one has a higher level of disgusting nature than the other, but as these build, you can see the reason why many of the people, many Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, and everyone wants to hurry this along because they knew more was coming and more of this could possibly happen. And they didn't want to have to deal with having to fend off these other allegations now. They didn't want to get to the point where they have to now defend, as you said, they can defend, oh, 36 years ago, how come you didn't do it sooner? Oh, you don't remember every detail. You don't remember what color pants he was wearing or what shoes, if they were Nike or if they were Reebok. But as it gets to things like dropping things in people's drinks, and because also, I'm sorry, the third defense is, oh, you were drinking, you were asking for, what were you wearing that night, Missy? Now when people's drinks are being, things are being dropped in their drinks, there's a slimmer and slimmer window of being able to forgive and write these off and say, hey, you were an 18-year-old guy once, weren't you? Mm-hmm. You, John, at home, you were, weren't you? You did this. The window is shrinking, and so they didn't want to have to get to this point.
Yeah.
So I'm curious now to see what approach you're going to take now to dispel these allegations.
And we certainly got a few. It's amazing the behaviors that both, you know, obviously Brett Kavanaugh doesn't care about what he did. Donald Trump doesn't care. The Republican senators don't care. They bring on a panel of women on Fox News that don't care. We're gonna show you some stats for some of the voters that don't care. He held someone down. He put his hand over her mouth. You know, does that really matter? It's high school. Boys will be boys. Okay. Drugging women and then having a rape train on them. Are there still people in this country? What percentage of even Republican voters, even hard right voters, are going to look at that and say, well, even if it's true, he should still be allowed to get
on the
Supreme Court?
There's a certain percentage because they don't care. It's because they're going, well, okay, fine, it happened. They have gone here. Okay, fine, it happened. But they're bringing it up now because they just don't like him. He has changed. Somehow, the guys that they support can change, even though there's absolutely no evidence that they have. But they can just assume so. They've changed, and they deserve to be on the Supreme Court. These rulings that you're trying to get, at least, you know, these a lot of the rulings that you want to have him come on to be another part of dropping another domino in your favor are way too important to you to shut off so many other people. Like, you're talking about worried about life. We know Roe v. Wade is one of the things they're going to come approach. So if you're worried about life, but then other people's lives have been destroyed for decades. Mm-hmm. You don't care about that life.
Yeah.
Just because you want to now have this victory. It's one of the things you don't want, an embarrassment for your president, an embarrassment for the guy that he nominated, who was, by the way, selected by a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
So it's their selection as well. You don't want that embarrassment, so that's the only reason why you're willing to push aside all of this.
Yeah.
And you can get mad about the political possibilities of Democrats bringing this in at the last minute to make it go longer. I applaud that. Do it again. Bring him on and push this further and further, because the things that he's willing to get on the court and judge on, most American people don't agree with.
Yeah. So, look, the one complicating factor of this is that for some people, the fact that Michael Avenatti is representing this woman is going to be, you know, not preferable. I would prefer that it was some other lawyer, because I think that he's a self-promoter.
I agree.
His reputation really has nothing to do with her, though. Let's bring up this next picture. That's her. She's not anonymous. They would love that she was anonymous so that they could then say, you know, it doesn't count because she's anonymous. That's who she is. We have quite a few details about her life. If you're interested, you can find those out. She wants to testify. She wants to stand, even though it's basically a firing line, you know, that you would get in this Judiciary Committee, she still wants to do it. The second accuser from yesterday also wants to do it. The only people who, they keep saying they want to get to the bottom of this, they want the truth, but they don't want to do anything that would actually produce that outcome, because I think they are afraid of what they would actually find.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Now, if you have any remaining hope for our country or a belief that, hey, maybe the differences that we believe we have between different segments of America's political spectrum, you know, we can bridge them. I've got a stat that's pretty scary. As a new NPR Marist poll, 54% of Republicans say that even if these allegations against Kavanaugh are true, he should still be confirmed. Now, as far as I know, this is Michael Avenatti, Julie Swetnick, the gang rapes and all that. But this is including multiple different incidents, multiple women, and them more than half say, it's not that I don't believe that they're true, it's that even if they're true, who cares? Put him on the Supreme Court for the rest of his life, give him as much power as any individual has in the world to judge the fates of others, to change the lives of others. I don't care how he has led his life.
This is the illustration of the stubborn nature of Americans. From birth, we're told to never admit you're wrong, never admit that you had a change of heart, never admit that someone that you previously trusted or believed in could violate that. Because somehow it's a slight on you to change your mind and say, you know what? I was wrong. Because as a country, we can't say, you know what? We were wrong. We shouldn't do this anymore. We should have never done that. Instead, you have to give excuses for it and say, we've gotten better magically, not by admitting to and changing things, but just by it just swept and it changed. But you can't in this moment, when you see a chance to, say, you know what? I voted for this guy. I trust everything he does. But for some reason, he's not who I thought he was. Mm-hmm. You can say that and you won't melt.
People develop these attachments to personalities and to the decisions that they made. They feel locked in. They don't want to second guess themselves. One additional detail, by the way, they keep saying that these are unsubstantiated. There's no evidence, none of that. Of course, throughout this, as we keep showing you, they don't want to get the evidence. They don't want to do anything to get the evidence. But in documents sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee, Christine Blasey Ford, the original accuser, has provided declarations from Ford's husband, Russell, and three friends who say that she had previously told them about this assault from Brett Kavanaugh before he was ever nominated to be on the Supreme Court. So this idea, this con game theory, this conspiracy theory that this is all being put together to take him down, this is all coming from before that. More and more and more and more people going on the record saying that what Brett Kavanaugh and his defenders are saying is not true. We have one quote from Adela Gildon Mazzo, one of the friends who said, this is previously, this is 2013, I believe. During our meal, Christine was visibly upset, so I asked her what was going on. Christine told me she'd been having a hard day because she was thinking about an assault she experienced when she was much younger. She said she had been almost raped by someone who is now a federal judge. She told me she had been trapped in a room with two drunken guys and that she had escaped, ran away, and hid. Again, that is years before he would ever be nominated to the Supreme Court.
But you will still hear people like Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and your president say, she's come up with these baseless claims that no one has ever heard before now. Why didn't you say it when he was a federal judge? Why didn't you say it after it happened? Why didn't you say it to a friend? Why didn't you say it to a counselor? Why didn't you say it to a husband? All of those things happened. Mm-hmm. But if you just because you say it didn't happen doesn't mean it didn't.
Yeah, and by the way, they keep saying, why didn't you say it then? Why didn't you say it a little bit earlier? You can go back to the morning after it happened. They're still not going to believe these women. That's spoiler alert. Sorry if I'm spoiling American politics for you. Okay, so we're going to take a break, though. But when we come back, we've got massive protests being held against JPMorgan Chase and Wells Fargo for their financing of for-profit prisons that are participating in family separation and other anti-immigrant abuses. We'll break that down with a representative of those movements after this. The Trump administration's policy of family detentions and infant detentions, family separation, all of that does not exist on its own. It requires a network of incredibly expanding for-profit prisons, private facilities, and those in turn require financing. And that is where you can possibly get involved, because some protests are coming up to help to destabilize that set of links. Joining us now to talk about this process, Nicole Regalado of Credo Mobile, digital organizer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very glad to have you here. So you've got two events coming up to protest JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo. Can you tell us about what those protests are going to look like?
Yes, absolutely. Lots of things going on today. Today is the National Day of Action for the Families Belong Together Corporate Accountability Co from across the country, who have come together to launch a massive campaign to put pressure on the big banks like Wells Fargo and JP Morgan Chase, who are financing and making huge profits from the for-profit prison corporations that are carrying out Trump's family separation and family incarceration agenda. Today in San Francisco, we have hundreds of activists that are heading down, knocking on the door of Wells Fargo headquarters right here in downtown. We're delivering more than 500,000 petition signatures to the bank, urging them to divest from the mass incarceration industry. And we've got folks in New York who are, as we speak, right in front of the JP Morgan Chase headquarters in Manhattan, urging JP Morgan Chase to do the same thing.
So how significant financially is this, both for the banks and for these for-profit facilities where people are being held? The financing links between them, is this significant amounts of money?
Absolutely. You know, Wells Fargo has loaned the Corrections Corporation of America $80 million. It's a part of a syndicate of banks that have loaned, that have financed the debt of Geo Group, companies like Geo Group, CoreCivic, in upwards in the amounts of over $700 million. And the banks are making huge profits from this. So, you know, it is morally wrong for corporations to be profiting from the pain of immigrant communities who are being separated from their families and incarcerated in these corrupt detention facilities.
You know, and I'm especially glad that you are drawing attention to the actions of these two massive banks, especially Wells Fargo. We talked recently on the show about their policy of they're now freezing people's accounts if they have questions about their citizenship, even though there's no legal requirement for that. And I think that a lot of people are becoming more awakened to the fact that these banks, you know, JP Morgan and all that, they finance a lot of politicians that are doing some horrible things. But I'm not sure up until this point how aware people are of their links with industries like the for-profit prison facilities and all of that. So I'm glad that you're helping to shed some light on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really been challenging for Credo and other immigrant rights groups who have been working to resist Donald Trump's anti-immigrant agenda is really breaking through the noise. There's so many attacks coming at us from every single angle. You mentioned, you know, banks like Wells Fargo, banks like Bank of America, who are freezing people's accounts when they cannot provide proof of citizenship. You know, that is not required to do business with a bank in this country. And right now, we're focusing on putting pressure on the major financiers who are not only complicit in locking up immigrant families, but they're actually profiting from it. And that's wrong.
So we've been talking recently again about especially the policy of the family separation, the kids that remain separated from their families. My fear is that the media has, for the most part, moved on from this topic, and also that a lot of Americans appear to believe that we had all this big activism around it. There was a big pushback against the Trump administration, and hey, we won. We solved the situation. In your experience, to your knowledge, what is the actual situation at both at the border and then this distributed network of facilities? Has this problem been solved?
Absolutely not. You know, Donald Trump's regime is launching attack after attack to make sure that immigrants are criminalized and to keep them, to throw them behind bars and then also keep them there. You know, we saw earlier this week, over the weekend, the Department of Health, the Department of Homeland Security introduced a regulation that would make it easier for the government to punish immigrants for using benefits like food assistance, housing assistance, Medicare, Medicaid. His zero tolerance policy gives the DOJ a mandate to criminally prosecute every undocumented immigrant. These are all the types of policy changes that are sanctioning horrific abuse at the border. And also, you know, it's not just at the border. ICE is separating families right here in our communities. And if we care about, you know, stopping the mass incarceration crisis in this country, we need to do everything we can to resist Trump's policies, to go after every single person and every single institution that is responsible for separating families, for locking them up. And that includes big banks like Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan Chase.
Nicole, this is JR. I was just wondering, so you're having the protests outside of the banks and bringing more public pressures. We talked about, we had that when it came to the family separation in the first place. What is the plan for taking mm-hmm. that from the protest to the legislation? Because that's a lot of times people think we've won because we made them be quiet about it. How are we going to switch that to legislation? Is there a plan with your organization with that aspect?
Right. So the next steps of the campaign is we've sent a letter to Wells Fargo executives demanding that they meet with us to discuss their plan, their intention on how they intend to change their investment practices. And we have to remember that Wells Fargo knows that their reputation matters. They care about their reputation. They just went through a whole corporate rebranding, and their new slogan talks about their recommitment in 2018 to the people. So if they truly are a bank for the people, then what we're asking them is, you know, keep that commitment. 2018 isn't over yet. They still have a chance to do the right thing and divest from the private prison industry.
Nicole Regalado, a digital organizer for Credo Mobile, thank you for both drawing attention to this issue and providing an opportunity for people to get involved. Hopefully many of them will.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take another short break. When we come back, Trump responds to what's happening with Kavanaugh, these new allegations of Kavanaugh's participation in gang rapes with a woman coming forward. And we have some of the prepared written testimony of Kavanaugh for tomorrow's hearings. Welcome back to the show, everybody. JR is in studio still. There's not enough time. We just got to jump back into Kavanaugh because there's a million things to find. Just like she was saying about the border, so many issues.
Mm-hmm. There's so many issues.
Okay. So we have the new accusations, obviously, that Kavanaugh had been involved in gang rapes in college. Now we have Trump's response to that. Is he going to maybe like step back a little bit? Like, do I really want to tie my reputation as someone who might have been gang raping people? No. He tweeted this. The Democrats are playing a high-level con game in their vicious effort to destroy a fine person. It is called the politics of destruction. Behind the scene, the Dems are laughing. Pray for Brett Kavanaugh and his family. This is a con game.
So now we're going to pray. Like, first off,
pray.
Donald Trump has prayed for no one ever in his life. He doesn't know what that means.
No, he has never.
Number two, he got the Democrats laughing confused with the UN General Assembly. Because mm-hmm. that's who was laughing yesterday at him. Again, now that he's unleashed, we talked about that when the first accusations came out and how he had this odd restraint that Donald Trump doesn't have ever mm-hmm. on anything. And he finally let loose. Once he let loose, it's just there's no more restraint. You would think he'd go back to reeling it in. After this third accusation comes out, then you go,
no.
I'm going to stay quiet. Because we're a day from the testimonies, which everyone on your side is so sure it's going to dispel everything and destroy everything. So much so they've already set the date for Friday to have the vote for his
yeah.
confirmation. So if you're so sure, just be quiet for 2 days.
Huh? Nope. White House aide says that he believes that he needs to take a personal control of the defense of Kavanaugh because Roy Moore wasn't enough to defend Kavanaugh. Now you need how many accused do you need in the background of the people defending him? But he also said this, Michael Avenatti is a third-rate lawyer who's good at making false accusations like he did on me, just in case anyone forgot that he had been accused of many sexual assaults, and like he's now doing on Judge Brett Kavanaugh. He's just looking for attention and doesn't want people to look at his past record and relationships. A total lowlife. That's the sort of dodge and attempted diversion that
Again,
he always does.
Normal people, when they see something like that, a statement from Donald Trump, they go, oh, yeah. Because, by the way, I'm not a fan of Michael Avenatti. Let's mm-hmm. put that out there. So when he says something like Avenatti is known to have these false accusations like he did with me, I would go, oh, yeah, those false accusations that he had with his client, Stephanie Clifford, my right is her real name, mm-hmm. And her accusations with you, which all came out to be true. So when you bring up these accusations, it makes people think about it. His supporters go, oh, yeah, whatever it is he said. I'm listening to what he says or reading it and thinking, oh, wait a second, those accusations turned out to be true.
Yeah, the problem is that you're thinking about it. The people he's targeting this message to are not going to think about it. He's expecting that, I think, at this point. Okay, so I also want to go to, this is not just tweets coming out. There's also video. Bear in mind as you watch this, Kavanaugh has now been accused of multiple either sexual assaults, attempted rapes, and also gang rape now. Incredibly serious as you could possibly get. This is what Donald Trump had to say about how he wishes this process had gone down.
Well, I think the Senate, the Republicans, could not be nicer in the way they're handling this. They could have pushed it through 2.5 weeks ago, and you wouldn't be talking about it right now, which is frankly what I would have preferred. But they didn't do that. The Republicans could not be nicer, could not be more respectful to the process, certainly could not be more respectful to the woman, and I'm okay with that. I think I might have pushed it forward a lot faster.
I know
this particular man, Judge Kavanaugh. He's outstanding. You don't find people like this. He's outstanding. He's a gem. He's an absolute gem. And he's been treated very unfairly by the Democrats who are playing a con game. They know what they're doing. It's a con. They go into a back room and they talk with each other and they laugh at what they're getting away with. It's a con game, and that's what they play.
Every word is projection.
It's the same thing.
It's a con
okay,
game.
Again, if you have to listen to what he's saying, because he says so much garbage flies out of his mouth. Republicans have been nothing but respectful and bending over backwards for this process, he says. I think he's a Republican. Mm-hmm. He says the women were too drunk to have any memory of it. They were drunk anyway. They were drinking. Took on to come out. It's a con game. There's no support from any corroborating evidence. Her parents weren't good parents. Where's the niceties of this whole process that you said Republicans have out of your own mouth? Mm-hmm. Is it the rest of Republicans and just not you?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're not going to go too in-depth, but Brett Kavanaugh's written testimony says far-fetched and odious claims. They debase our public discourse. They're grotesque and obvious character assassination. All of this stuff, they could not be nicer. By the way, not just in terms of what they say, the process couldn't be nicer. He says that in the middle of a paragraph, the point of which is to say they never should have had a hearing in the first place. They should have just pushed it through, not even heard any of this, let alone all of the other accusations. They're not going to hear those. It couldn't be nicer. And again, I want to remind, never trust anything that he says. If he says something that seems reasonable or seems like, hey, I actually agree with that, he's going to reverse himself soon because he's now saying they should have just pushed it through. That's what I would have preferred. What did he say on September, was it 18th? He said, we should go through a process because there shouldn't even be a little doubt. So a week ago, he's saying we should have this process. I don't want there to be any doubt. I want it to be fair and clean. Now he's saying they should have just pushed it through and had nothing whatsoever, not even the minimal sort of farce kangaroo court that they're going to set up tomorrow. They shouldn't even have that. And by the way, in doing that, in shutting down the voices of all of these women, not even hearing their claims and calling them odious and far-fetched, or in the words of Louis Gohmert today, evil, we are being nicer than possible. No one could be nicer than we are when we call them evil, when we call them lying whores and all of that.
Definitely don't want to see them not being nice.
God only knows.
This nice
we know what Brett Kavanaugh is like when he's not nice. He gets rapey, unfortunately, when he's not nice. It's 2018. This is after the Me Too movement. And we've had so little progress in terms of moving half the country that they don't even have to pretend to care about the experiences of this woman. This is something that we've come back to 100 times, obviously. But that they can just say that this new woman, she puts her name to it, she puts her face to it, she says that she was gang raped. It's a con game. This is coming from a guy who is an expert on cons, of course. That has been his entire career. We know that. That's probably why his mind instantly goes to that. But they don't even have to pretend to care. It is really amazing how, even, despite their low popularity, despite the fact that it looks like this election is going to be devastating for them, they feel emboldened to aggressively attack the women, perhaps to a greater extent than they did with Anita Hill. And now they're going to have this female sex crimes prosecutor try to destroy Christine Blasey Ford tomorrow, you know, when we're doing our live coverage. It's not even that they haven't learned anything from those past experiences, that they've apparently learned something, and it's terrible.
They've learned that generally the American society will accept this stuff. This is an indictment of who we are as a country. Again, the whole thing is with the Me Too movement from the beginning. All of these, all of the victims of it that finally came forward, and the people who've gone down, very famous people that have gone down, the reason they did it is because society accepted it and supported this.
Yeah.
So the politicians think the same way. If any of these politicians on this side of the aisle go against what they've always pushed, which is against women and victims, they will see a backlash from their support, their base, like they've never seen before. And they That's know sick. That. This is more of an indictment on our society and our country and how we've always treated victims of this kind of assault as just, they're lying. Why didn't they do it a long time ago? We're the problem.
Yeah.
It's time for that to change, and then they can.
Yeah, and again, while all this is happening, obviously there's millions of women out there that have had experiences like this, and they have to watch and see, this is why I didn't come forward, this is why I don't tell anyone now, look how I would be treated if I ever told anyone about the tragedies that have happened in my life. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We were just talking about the midterms. We're going to be joined by Emily Tush Sussman, who's going to join us. She's from Swing Left, helping to try to swing the Congress back to the Democrats. We're going to figure out how they're going to do that after this. So our hope is that after this midterm election, the Congress and possibly even the Senate will look very different and will turn in a new direction. But that's not going to happen without people getting involved and organizations getting involved. And we're very lucky now to be joined by Swing Left Senior Advisor Emily Tush Sussman, who's going to talk to us a little bit about that process. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Very glad to have you here. So you are part of this organization. You have a program going on attempting to change the composition of the Congress. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the last weekend, it's a great rebranding of something that's always happened on campaigns. I'm sure a lot of your viewers are familiar with the concept of GOTV, getting out the last weekend, and really volunteering, knocking on doors, making calls. The reality is that we feel like our country is going crazy in a lot of ways under this administration, but we need to ensure that we actually get every single vote, every person who is eligible to vote actually knows that the election is coming, the days, the parameters, can they vote? And the best way to do that is still person to person. In some ways, we live in an age where we think that like everything lives online, and maybe that's because our president tweets his policies online. But the reality is that person to person is the way to do it. It's the way to get to people. And we can't just rely on hoping that people are going to talk to their friends and neighbors, which of course we hope that they do. But it turns out that friends and neighbors of congressional districts are a very real thing here. The majority of districts that are swingable, that are the congressional districts I'm talking about, that are able to be moved from Republican to Democrat this year, are actually in a very close driving proximity to districts that are solidly blue. So what we're doing with Swing Left and the last weekend is a coalition of over 50 organizations talking to their people that are in districts that are more solidly blue, saying, hey, get out there. You know you're going to vote already. Maybe you've already voted an early vote or absentee vote by mail. Spend this last weekend going out to your neighboring districts, knocking on doors, and ensuring that everyone is planning to vote in the districts, and we can really swing them this year.
So as you're talking, we have up one of the videos from the last weekend. I saw Rashida Jones talking about that historically in midterm elections, voter participation goes down. It's already low for young voters, but even lower in the midterm. So in terms of this particular election, you're talking about going out there, talking one-on-one, you know, personal contact with these people. What are you trying to focus on in terms of this election that you think is going to break through that normal process? And what issues are those voters apparently being energized the most about or around?
Yeah, look, young voting in midterm elections is abysmally low, like pathetically low. We know that we need to do better as a generation already getting out there, but midterm elections, it's just not something that ends up on people's radars. They have so much going on. So it is so highly dependent on their friends to tap into them and say, hey, did you register to vote? Are you sure that you're registered at your current address? Do you know where your polling place is? It is so important on people talking to their friends that way. I mean, this year, I mean, honestly, like it's hard to say what is the top issue because it feels like everything is the issue. Like any issue that you really care about is under attack. if it's your own healthcare, if it's your community being deported, if it's the fabric of our democracy. I mean, this week, today, is insane. This Supreme Court nominee is unbelievable. And Republicans are saying we basically don't care that he assaulted a woman in his teens and probably two others and maybe more. Yeah. They're going to go ahead with the vote anyway. We've actually traditionally seen courts as a motivating factor much higher on the conservative side and Republican side than it has been as a factor for Democrats to turn out. I think that's going to be one of the biggest surprises of this cycle, that the issue of courts and the Supreme Court in particular is going to be a very big motivating factor on the Democratic side in a way that it hasn't traditionally been in midterms or in elections at all.
So I want to provide one more bit of motivation for people who, there's probably not a lot of people who watch this show every day and are not interested in voting. They just don't really care. But there might be a few, hypothetically. So we have had the experience in the past couple of years of an election night that did not go the way that we either wanted or thought that it would. So here's a hypothetical for you. So we get to this midterm election. It turns out the blue wave runs up against a red wall and voter suppression, gerrymandering, all of that. They maintain control of the Senate. They maintain control of the House. What are the stakes in this case? What do you see happening if people don't get out there and the Republicans have as much power the day after the election as they do the day before?
That is one of the scariest thoughts to me. It's free reign. It's everything we've seen come from this administration that has come through through regulation they've done from the administrative branch will actually be codified through law, through Congress, and will be upheld by their handpicked Supreme Court. It really scares me. Honestly, one of the things that does scare me at this point is that the media narrative has set the bar so high for what a blue wave is going to be that there's a little bit of complacency in it.
Yeah.
That people aren't actually checking their own registration and they're not actually ensuring that they're getting out to volunteer. So if this has scared you in any way, please visit the last weekend. Please put those shifts in. I can't plug thelastweekend.org enough. I look forward to seeing you all in the field. But honestly, because the stakes are incredibly high, really in every issue, in every area that we care about, we've seen a stronger attack on those areas than we had even contemplated going into this cycle.
Yeah, well, hopefully that hypothetical was just a thought experiment and not a look at the future. Emily Tesh Sussman, Senior Advisor for Swing Left, thank you for joining the Damage Report.
Thank you so much.
Okay, one more quick break. And then, meanwhile, and while all of this is going on here in America, huge developments abroad, we're going to be breaking those down when we come back from this break. Okay, so in America right now, we are obviously very focused on what's going on with Brett Kavanaugh, the continuing accusations. Will he get on the Supreme Court? Meanwhile, in this is a serious one. Meanwhile, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, they are dealing with an absolutely brutal new outbreak of Ebola that they're dealing with. So far, the death toll lower than it was in years past, but the situation has become much more complicated in terms of their ability to actually do something about it. And by the way, since the outbreak in the DRC was declared on August 1st, there have been 150 confirmed and probable cases and more than 100 deaths. The case toll has been slowing down, but there are a series of grave obstacles to actually doing something about it, because in comparison to the earlier, like 2014, 2015 cases of Ebola, we have cases that are spread out over a very large distance, more than 100 miles. Some of those now in areas where war is going on, and health officials in some cases are still trying to go in there and deal with it. But obviously, it makes it much more difficult to move equipment, to freely move about the countryside. And that means that although they learned a lot from past cases of Ebola, it is much harder to actually do something about it in this case.
Crazy. I remember when the Ebola outbreak was before. Was it 2014, you said?
There's been several, but yeah, that was the worst.
The latest one where everyone, it was actually the talk of international talk. And actually, we talked about it in America. Crazy. It didn't happen here, straight up. And a lot of people learned a lot of things about it because we cared. Imagine that world when we're caring about other things going on in the world, because here it's just normal issues we're dealing with. But instead, we're dealing with how many crazy things are going on within our own country. So this happens and we're thinking, oh yeah, Ebola, that whole thing that we don't care about anymore because we're dealing with a rogue president. It's sucks that you long for those days, mm-hmm. but you long for those days.
Yeah, and right now it's relatively constrained to that area geographically. But remember, during the last one, we were worried about this spreading out. Obviously, it's terrible the damage it's doing there, but this is the sort of thing that could become international, could get all over the place. We narrowly avoided that back in the past outbreak. And so I was looking into it. And so this is a little, just a test, a sort of gut test. Back in 2014, 2015, how many people died from Ebola in that outbreak? Just out of curiosity, your estimate, how many people died?
The 2014 outbreak?
Mm-hmm. That was the serious one. You know, like people were talking about it. More serious than this in terms of number dead. Here we have 100.
1,100.
11,000. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I only know that because I looked it up. But that is crazy how bad it was.
Wow.
That's 3 9/11s. And we've largely moved on, so much so that when it comes back, we don't even really focus on it.
I said 11, right? I meant 11.
You said 1,100.
I meant 11,000.
11,000. Well, then you got it then.
You guys cut my mic.
Exactly. So that's going on in the DRC. Meanwhile, in... That is a very happy intro. Again, not a happy situation, though. In the western portion of China, Uyghur Muslims are being detained by the hundreds of thousands in an attempt to indoctrinate them, incorporate them more into Chinese culture, and especially stamp out the Muslim religion there. These ethnic Uyghur Muslims spend their days in high-pressure indoctrination programs where they're forced to listen to lectures, sing hymns praising the Chinese Communist Party, and write, quote, self-criticism essays, according to detainees who have been released. And we have some more details about the goal here. The officials have not banned Islam, but dictated very narrow limits for how it should be practiced, including a prohibition against praying at home if there were friends or guests present. In other sessions, the inmates were forced to memorize laws and write essays criticizing themselves. But also, in some cases, the government is installing video cameras in the homes of these people to make sure that they're acting right once they're outside of these indoctrination programs.
Again, hey, these are humans. Imagine this is your life, and this is what you have to go through. Again, critical essays about yourselves because of who you are and who you grew up with and how you were taught to praise and worship. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on in other parts of the world. But we're hearing about China. We're hearing about it with tariff situations and how much they're screwing us over. The collision of what's important in the world sometimes needs to be refocused.
Yeah. I mean, very good point. To the limited extent that we hear anything about China now, it's the tariffs. Trump today said that he believes that China is interfering in the 2018 elections. So, hey, he's interested in that topic slightly. But no, this is a sort of internal thing that maybe a documentary will be made and maybe it'll do well at Sundance and people will pay attention to it for a little bit. But for the people, hundreds of thousands of people with this culture, they are being forced to effectively destroy their culture on their own, being forced to do it themselves. And that is, of course, absolutely horrendous. And while all of that is going on, meanwhile in... That footage of Yemen, of course, making it look like the situation there is relatively stable. We know, of course, that it is not. Many times we've talked about the civil war there, our own involvement, the U.S. in that war, and Saudi Arabia's absolutely horrendous bombing campaigns, the cholera outbreaks and starvation going on there, the bombing of the school bus that we talked about where dozens of school kids were unnecessarily killed. One area of Yemen is trying something fairly radical, especially for Yemen, and that is gun control. So Yemen apparently has more privately owned guns per person than any, except America, of course, where prosperous gun owners can afford far more. But it is very common for people to own guns. And what they're attempting to do is a total ban on guns for non-uniformed personnel. This is Mukalla, the capital of Hadhramaut province on the southern coast. The only people carrying guns are in uniform. There are banners warning civilians not to bear arms in public. Those wishing to enter them must turn over the weapons at one of several checkpoints. And they say that they have bins where the guns are being collected that they say could arm multiple militias. Now, apparently, culturally, there are big portions of Yemen where various tribes say that being armed is a thing of self-sufficiency and pride and all of that, very much like portions of America, of course. But not so in this area, which means they're a little bit more amenable to this sort of gun control proposal.
You know, we've talked about gun control in America before, and there's examples of other countries and how there's certain gun control measures that they do have that have worked. And when we compare them to ourselves, a lot of times we go, blah. Mm-hmm. So again, this seems like it's an even tougher hill to climb in a country like Yemen where seemingly there's constant war, which probably not seemingly. But so if there's any kind of success in a country here where this happens, to this degree, you definitely can't bring this up to many Americans. Be like, well, it worked in Yemen, because they'll go, yeah. Yemen? Yeah. That war-torn country that we have nothing to do with?
Yeah.
Exactly. It won't work. So, I mean, if it works, it won't work to convince anyone here.
Yeah, well, certainly more power to them for trying. I mean, the more difficult a domestic situation you have, the more admirable attempts at social reform actually are. We've talked previously about in Saudi Arabia, the women who are pushing for the right to drive and all of that. Mm-hmm. Some people have died in that activism, but they have been making strides in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia because of the audacious action of activists like that. Same sort of thing going on here in Yemen in a situation that is even more deadly, at least on a daily basis. We have more that we wish we could get to. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time for it. We will be returning to more of these a little bit later on. As we had said in the early part of the show, tomorrow we're going to have the damage report. We're also going to have for our members a day-long coverage of the Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh testimony. Thank you, JR, for joining us on the show. Always good to have you here. Thank you for watching. We'll be back with more damage report for you tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.